David Walker, the former Comptroller General of the United States, rejoining PricewaterhouseCoopers and joining me to discuss the latest moves in his career and what he will be working on and improving government performance. General Walker, it's a habit. I call you that, and I apologize. But I appreciate your service as the Comptroller General, and I'm happy that we're able to continue our conversation now that you're back in the private sector. Transitioning back to that private sector after your service at the GAO and most recently candidacy in your home state of Connecticut, what are you going to be working on for PwC? Dave, thanks for joining me, sir.
Well, Francis, first, thanks for having the opportunity to be back with you. I really kind of come back home because I started my professional career with Pricewaterhouse, and I'd also worked with Coopers and Lybrand before the firms merged. I'm in the public sector practice. I'm a senior strategic advisor, and basically what I'm going to be focusing on is helping government leaders at the federal, state, and local level, and to a certain extent internationally, who want to try to achieve government transformation. That means economy, efficiency, effectiveness, et cetera, to do so. And secondly, for those government entities that have serious financial problems and competitiveness challenges, a number of states are in that category and some cities, to really try to help them restructure their finances and create a better future.
No lack of potential clients in that business, sir.
Well, the list is long, but you know, it's not just a matter of who needs help. It's a matter of who understands they need help and is willing to make the tough choices. You know, it really comes down to the chief executive officer. No matter what level of government you're in, you know, whether you're at the federal level, the state level, or the local level, if the chief executive officer doesn't want to make the necessary transformational changes, you're really wasting your time.
Do you get a sense that enough leaders in government think of themselves as chief executive officers, or do they think of themselves as secretaries or administrators or directors or whatever the title happens to be?
Well, I think a vast majority would consider themselves as, you know, secretaries or administrators or whatever the title would be. And you have to keep in mind that in the government, you know, you've got a very high percentage of the top people are political appointees, and their typical tenure in their position might be, you know, 3 years. And so there's a tendency for them not to want to end up taking on tough transformational change initiatives because it's something that, for the most part, they're not going to be able to begin and complete during their tenure. At the same point in time, how government is run is really important, no matter what political party controls the White House or the Congress. And so that's why it's important that not only that the heads of the departments and agencies be focused on it, but that we have the right kind of people as chief operating officers or chief management officials, if you will, who are focused on it full time and who have a greater degree of continuity, irrespective of who controls the White House and the Congress.
That's an example of that popped up when Bob Work became essentially the COO, the Deputy Secretary at the Defense Department, very widely heralded for his skills when he did a similar job at the Department of Navy, and folks said that he's a perfect fit for that. And I wonder if there is a skill set that people in government should look to when they're thinking about who the right person for that particular job should be, if you're even whether it's a political appointee or whether it's a career person.
Well, as you probably recall, Francis, when I was Comptroller General, one of the things that we recommended at GAO is that very large and complex agencies and high-risk entities ought to have chief management officers or chief operating officers that are selected based upon their competencies and their skills and abilities. They might well be political appointees, but they need to have certain types of, you know, leadership and management skills and abilities in order to be successful. We also recommended that it needed to be a level two position, should have a term appointment, typically a five-year appointment, which could be renewed at least once, a performance contract, and I think those are critical elements. Now, the Defense Department ended up adopting a deputy chief management officer, but it didn't end up having all the criteria that it needs to have, and it's not at the right level in order to be successful. I agree with you that the current deputy secretary I hear very good things about. On the other hand, you know, typically the deputy secretary is only going to be in the job a couple of years, and we need, or 3 years, and we need to have more continuity than that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about the fact that regardless of his level of skill and the and whatever he demonstrates in the job, the Secretary of Work is not likely to be there after noon January 20th, 2017. There'll be somebody else acting in that job until the next president decides who they want to do that. And that speaks exactly to the continuity issue that you're talking about, Dave.
And that's why I think what we have to recognize, it's understandable that those positions would be political appointee positions, but they're really more professional positions. They're really more leadership and management positions. The people have to be politically acceptable, but they need to be based, they need to be selected primarily based upon their competence and their proven track record. And, you know, we need to be thinking about having term appointments there. They're really talking about operational management. They're not talking about, you know, the type of policy issues that, you know, the president might end up wanting to change, you know, when they take office.
I don't mean to pick on the Defense Department or Secretary of Work, but I wonder if that, if the situation that the Defense Department is in budget-wise, where there's a real big back and forth among the administration, Congress, and DOD about what the budget will look like, wouldn't be a good argument for what you're suggesting, Dave, which is, regardless of what would happen with the election in 2016, there would be somebody in that number two role to be able to continue to make the arguments on behalf of the agency without a political agenda would give that person, I imagine, a fair amount of currency.
I agree, and they need to be able to take the long view. Now, let me be clear. I think if you're talking about the Defense Department, you probably want a deputy secretary for policy, and you probably want a deputy secretary for management, like the chief operating officer, chief management official. And believe me, there's more than enough work to do, to be able to have a couple of deputies, if you will. But I think this is a concept whose time has come, and we have to be realistic that while you have to have the support for the secretary and the agency head, they're not necessarily going to have the time, nor are they going to necessarily have the background to be able to perform this function, nor are they necessarily going to be there long enough in order to be able to achieve success with regard to a number of transformational change initiatives.
David Walker was Comptroller General of the United States from 1998 to 2008, and General Walker now with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We'll let Secretary Work alone and the Defense Department alone for a couple of minutes and just talk more broadly about this idea of government transformation, because there are a lot of people, Dave, who are talking about wanting to do it. And yet I continue to see folks who are stuck in kind of a cultural quagmire and not really able to get around that idea of we were here before you were here and we'll be here after you're gone. And it's not limited to political appointees anymore, it doesn't seem, Dave. Is that a fair read on my part, do you think?
Well, that's a fair read. But let's face it, you know, government is a large, complex enterprise. It's a very important one. But for the most part, it doesn't face any competition. And therefore, it doesn't have the same type of external pressures to change. You know, basically what I want to do is two things. When I was head of the GAO, and it's a great agency with great people, we led by example. We put in our first ever strategic plan. We reorganized the agency based upon that plan. We changed our performance measurement systems. We looked at our sourcing strategies. I can go on and on, but the bottom line is that we were 13% smaller, 50 to 100% more productive, three times the outcome-based results, generated $110 return for every dollar invested in the agency when I left, ranked second best place to work in the federal government, and a 95% positive rating by the Congress, which is a fairly difficult client. Candidly, what we did there is transferable and scalable throughout government. And if you have a leader that wants to get it done, it is possible to get it done, but they'll need help in order to be successful. And then if you look at, you know, the financial condition of a lot of states and some localities, they have huge unfunded retirement obligations, out-of-date tax systems, welfare programs that aren't working effectively, that are fraught with fraud, waste, and abuse. And you need to be able to have experts to be able to come in, separate the wheat from the chaff, and help, you know, build the case and show the way forward to create a better future. And that's where I think I have some particular unique skills and abilities to help.
What are
PwC has the resources?
What are the big obstacles that you've seen throughout your career, both public and private sector, to the execution? You said if the leadership's willing, the things that you did at GAO are scalable. what are the obstacles to doing that, and what are the best tools to deploy in addition to the concept of a COO-type person, as you described earlier, Dave?
Well, it starts with the leadership. You've got to have the CEO, whatever level of government, who wants to make the change and is willing to make it a priority and to invest some personal time to make the necessary changes and to make the tough decisions. You got to have a plan. You know, frankly, you know, most agencies don't have a plan. You have to restructure your organization to be able to support that plan, to, you know, minimize the number of footprints, to minimize the number of layers, levels, and silos within the organization. You have to redefine how do you measure success based upon outcomes. You need to link your institutional unit, individual performance measurement reward systems towards how you do define success. You know, you need to decide, you know, what type of operation should be done internally, what should be outsourced, and how you're going to end up overseeing cost, quality, and performance with regard to what you do outsource. There's lots of things. But, you know, it's shocking to me how, you know, few organizations in government have really pursued this, you know, comprehensive transformation approach, which really pays huge dividends for all involved.
What do you think the primary factor for that is? Is it just will? We're not interested in getting into the fights that will ensue if we try to pursue an agenda like that?
Well, a lot of it is, as we said before, you know, the top leaders in most of these agencies are political appointees, and they're typically not there very long, and they may not have a background in these types of, you know, leadership, operational, and change management areas. And so as a result, there's a hesitancy to start. But it's important that we recognize that the country faces serious fiscal challenges, and that discretionary spending continues to come under additional pressures, and that it's important that we try to get as, you know, as good a performance as we can with whatever level of resources we have, and that we be able to provide some additional fiscal flexibility. And this is one way to do it.
I think the first time that you and I spoke was when you were releasing IOUSA, the documentary about the fiscal situation the country's in, when you were with the Peterson Foundation, sir. Do you have any sense that that concept, that what you talked about in that that film, the fiscal situation the country's in broadly, has sunk in the years since that film's come out?
Well, it had an impact. There's no question. If you ask the public, you'll see that they're very concerned about you know, the current condition of the country and the future direction of the country. At the same point in time, there's a false sense of security that's settled in at the federal level, because deficits have gone from $1.4 trillion a year down to a little bit less than $500 billion a year. But what you've got to look at is, you know, where we were, where we are, and where we're headed. And when you look at debt as a percentage of the economy, and that's what matters, we're over where we should be, and we're headed in the wrong direction. That is a, you know, that is a flashing red light. And I think the next president is clearly going to have to provide some extraordinary leadership to try to be able to help us make some tough decisions with regard to mandatory spending, with regard to tax policy, and a more intelligent way to be able to go about, you know, constraining the growth of discretionary spending.
One final question for you, Dave, and I appreciate your time today. Very generous with it. Is there a way for us to look at the issues that we've talked about in this conversation a year from now or 5 years from now and say we've made a little bit of progress, we've made no progress, we're worse off? How do you measure that?
Well, it's important that you benchmark. I mean, you know, in order to understand where you're at, you've got to see where are you based upon the type of outcomes you want. Are you getting better than worse? And how do you compare to your comparator group? It's possible to do that as an organization. It's possible to do that, you know, as a country. And I think it's an important principle that we need to start applying. You know, we have to define what are we trying to achieve, and then end up having some metrics and milestones geared towards doing that, and then see what kind of progress we're making along the way.
Dave, I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on your move to PwC, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks, Francis. Take care.